And welcome back to the Filmmaking Nova Podcast. This is part one of my conversation with actress Bridget Malbrew.
I'm Bridget Malbrew, and I am a mother. I have two children. I'm a wife to only one husband, thank God, because that's enough. I'm an actor. I'm an activist. My lifelong motto is don't tell me I do what I want and live your best life. So we got that out of the way right out the gate.
Out the gate.
coming in hot.
So you say you're an actor.
That is correct.
Why don't you tell me more about this whole acting thing you do?
Like the beginning, how it started, what do you want?
From a galaxy far, far away. Okay. The beginning of time.
On August 10th, 1982, I arrived on this planet. And that's where it all began and started to go downhill from there. No, so when I was a kid, I basically lived by my motto, don't tell me I do what I want. And I wouldn't listen to what my mom said. And I learned...
Big shocker there.
Right? At an early age, I learned that if I would act sad or cry, and when I would get in trouble, my mom didn't care. But my dad, I wouldn't get in near as much trouble. So, I came from the era of spanking. So my mom would beat your butt and she didn't care if you were crying. Obviously she would care if you had bones sticking out. That never happened and it wasn't abuse. But my dad, if he would just barely, and then you would start to cry, he would stop. So I learned that very early on. So I guess that's where it began. out of a need comes an outlet, and that's how that started. And then I would go for coffee time instead of tea time with my grandma. And I had a bunch of old lady friends. Mm-hmm. And I had kids my age that I was friends with, but I was more, I guess, of an old soul. And I would go with her. And they nicknamed me Movie Star. That's what they called me. One of them in particular would call me that all the time. She was like, oh, you're my little movie star. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's never going to happen. So, so far I am correct. It has not happened.
That's not true.
I'm not a movie star. Huh. I'm a movie fixture. So everyone knows what props are. I'm basically a human prop most of the time. I do background work. So there's a lot of movies, TV shows that I'm an extra in. They don't really like that term anymore. They like the term background actor. Yeah. So I do that. I've done some commercials. I've worked in some independent films. That's basically kind of the gist of what's happening.
Cool. I do like the term background actors, though, because you do have to act in the background.
Right.
No, so you're not just... They don't just put you in a chair, just sit here still. You actually have to do something.
Correct. There's times when I have actually done background acting and you see the back of your head. And I always think it's so funny because you got to go through hair and you got to go through makeup and you got to go through wardrobe and there's this big old process and they film the back of your head. and it's like, isn't my makeup gorgeous? The world is going to see. And then there's times when, like, I do driving on movies too. And this one recently in particular, they had me listed as, they called it a destitute person, as close as you can get to being homeless without actually being homeless. I was driving my car. And my car is a 2021. So if I'm a destitute person and I'm looking like, as I refer, a hobo, that doesn't add up.
So you had to use your own car?
Yes. I had to use my own car.
That makes no sense to me.
And I thought it was so funny because that morning I stopped at the gas station to get a cup of coffee. And the lady goes, oh, is that all you have? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, oh, well, you can just go. So, like, I think she thought I really was homeless. So I was playing the part great.
Nice. Nice. I know you said like it started in whatever 1982, blah blah blah. Somebody called you a movie star, but in all seriousness, when did you actually start doing the whole acting thing.
Well,
getting into that realm of the film industry and all that stuff.
I did some acting, like in kindergarten, I was the lead in the play. Well, mm-hmm. It was pre-K. And then I was in a sixth grade play, and then I was in some high school stuff. But that was all, with the exception of pre-K, it was all very minor roles.
Right.
I got started in the film industry in August of 2019. I really love horror, and I found out they were filming the Purge TV show.
Okay.
In New Orleans, and I loved season one.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found out it was filming here, I was on the Purge's Facebook page, and I'm like, hey, what do I have to do to just like see 5 minutes of y'all filming? I just want to see how this works, you right. know. And someone chimed in and they're like, oh, well, you can go and be an extra. And I'm like, well, what do I do? how does that even, you know, come about?
Right.
So she told me where to go, and I submitted it, and I was so excited that I got the call and they needed me. So I was like, oh my God, this is just amazing. And country come to town, I had no idea. I knew no one.
Right.
And I walked in and it was like 250, 300 people. It was a huge cattle call. And I was like, oh crap. I don't even know where to go. Because they're trying to corral everybody right. in their, you know, certain little areas that they have to go to. And this was pre-COVID, so it was a little bit different. So I went in and they're like, oh, you have to get your voucher. And I'm like, what's a voucher? And they're like, well, that's how you get paid. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm really just doing this for fun. I mean, pay is great, but yay, fun. So I go to the lady at the PA, which now I know she's a PA. I didn't even know what that was. But I went to her and she's like, hey, did she say SAG? I think she might have said union. She goes, are you union? I'm like, what's that? She goes, I take that as a no. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, I need you to fill this out. And I'm like, what? And she just moved to the side and filled this out. And I'm like, okay. So then I sat down and I started looking at it, and it was like Greek. I didn't know what it was asking. So one thing about the background community is there's a lot of helpful people.
Right.
So this lady helped me fill it out. So then I had to go through hair and makeup and wardrobe because they have to make sure everything is what they want
right.
for your close-up of behind your head. And then we sat down and we were waiting, and it was an outside scene, and then it started raining like really, really, really bad. So they held us for about an hour and a half after that, and then they came and they wrapped everybody. So I never saw the movie set at all. So everybody's like screaming and they're like, oh, we're getting paid. And I'm like, oh,
but I want to see it.
I'm like, but I want to be here. And then and they're like, well, they'll probably call you back. I'm like, they're never going to call me back. I'm never going to get to see. I can't ever do anything I want to do. And they ended up calling me back. And so then we went through the whole thing again. And I saw how things are worked out. And that's where it began.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did some independent things. One in particular that I do not care to speak of because it was very unprofessional. And then I also met some wonderful people on a movie set of Dear Kate, and made some lifelong friends. And that's kind of what brings me here today, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Dear Kate, which I'm sure people know by now, is the one that I wrote and directed.
If not, the time has come.
But you were just supposed to be background on that. We ended up actually giving you lines. Well, you actually gave your own self lines.
Right, because I do what I want.
That's right. True story. No, but for the scene that you was in, you was brought in to be a bar patron.
Right.
And you and your husband was there. And is that a whole bunch of, we need to fill in the space with some improv dialogue stuff. And I don't know, I was no part of that. I just said we just need to see something here.
Right.
But you and Lulu, our bartender for the scene, came up with this dialogue. It was like, it was funny. I thought it was hilarious. Your mom cooking gumbo, best in town.
That's right. How's your mom? Because you have to keep it local. How's your mama and them? Yeah, I mean, when you run into someone at the grocery store, which I don't because I do online shopping, and I feel like a peasant when I have to go in the real grocery store. And I tell people that when I'm on the phone with them, I'm like, I have to go be a peasant and go in the real store. But if you do and you run into someone, you're always like, oh, how's your mama and them? And that is just Louisiana slang for how is everyone you've ever met your entire life?
Yes.
Please let me know.
Yes. How's your mama and them? It kind of reminds me of remember that old commercial they had with the collect calls? Well, I forgot. Blah, blah, blah. It's a boy.
No, the- Yes. It's like they jumbled the whole thing together. Will you accept a collect call from how you, it's your son and it's a boy. Hi, no. Mom, it's your son and it's a boy.
It's Bobby and a baby. It's a boy.
Yeah, that's it. It was something like
somebody
that.
Somebody like that, yeah.
We had a baby. It's a boy.
Yeah, we had a baby. It's a boy. That was it. We had a baby. It's a boy.
We saw that commercial the other day on something. I'll probably a YouTube video or something like that. I was like, oh, memories. But going back to that whole improv thing, is that I think I did a very good job with the improv I did on it. On a spur of the moment kind of thing. Is that something, have you taken acting classes? Are you self-taught? Or have you been studying under somebody? And if so, is improv one of the things that you've learned? Or is that something you do naturally?
I feel like improv, I mean, not that you can't hone in on your skill and you can't be taught.
Right.
But I think you kind of sort of have it for the most part. I have never taken an improv class. It's one of these things that it's a skill you have basically when you just don't shut up. So you kind of just go with it. I have taken one acting class and it helped me a lot, but I just haven't taken another one. It just hasn't.
Yeah.
Been in the cards per se.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I think it would be amazing to take some improv classes and some other classes, but those classes can be very expensive and that adds up really quick.
Yeah. Understandable. I will say this much about the cost of things, I guess, for the lack of better terms. And then something me and Hick was talking about our last guest that we had, I strongly believe this, no matter what you're doing, whether acting or directing, cinematography, editing, writing a book, whatever, anything you do, is always say invest in yourself because nobody else will. But that's
facts. That is true.
You know, put in the budget.
That's right. You know,
but anyway.
Yeah. So what you're saying is my kids need to eat some ramen.
That's right.
Roman. We had a big conversation about that the other day. Is it ramen noodles, Ramen noodles, Roman noodles? I don't know. I don't even eat that. But yeah.
It's Roman numerals.
Eat some Roman numerals and hush your mouth.
That's it.
That's what I'm going to need you to do. Because mama needs to get some classes.
See, you know, we all heard the whole struggling artist thing, right?
Right.
Well, you have a family. It's a struggling artist's family now.
That's right. Y'all need to struggle extra hard.
That's right. Sardine cans, potted meat. Hey, Hick does it.
I'm sorry. I would just eat bread.
Listen to the last podcast.
I can't Vienna. I never could. I'm too bougie, I guess, for that. I could never Vienna sausage, potted meat, spam, hot dogs, sausage. Mm-mm. No, thank you.
But you do love mushrooms, though.
Only when I want to die. A whole lot. Not even a little bit. When I want to die, a whole lot. Then I'll have mushrooms. So, fun fact, I'm allergic if you didn't pick up on that.
Oh, wow. So, what was your first acting gig? As for not just background, but like actually like acting. Did you say you did commercial work and you did?
Yes. My first acting gig per se that was in front of a camera was a very, I'm trying to say this as nicely as I can say without offending anybody. It was very low budget. Actually, it was like probably negative budget. There was no script. There was no clear direction on what to do. It was basically, let's just play movie.
Right.
So if we take that out of the equation, the next thing I would have done, we left out, I did music video, a bunch of music videos too. So I did a music video with a rapper named Jay Lewis, and I had to audition for that. And that was strictly improv. And that had a storyboard, I guess, because we had different scenes and we knew kind of what was going to happen. And there was a director, and it was a legitimate video.
Right.
So I guess it would be that.
Okay. So you said you had the audition for that music video.
Mm-hmm.
How was the auditioning process for that?
It was interesting. I got on a website, basically kind of, sort of, in a way. And this was in the midst of the pandemic. And I was like, you know what? Let me just do this. And I'll use it kind of as an acting class just to get my feet wet a little bit. Right. See what this is about and just get familiar with it. So anything that I thought I remotely would fit the character and it was close to me, I would send my headshot and my information in. And this was filmed in Baton Rouge, and the lady contacted me, and it was a like a Zoom audition. And there were no lines to learn. And it was basically saying, you're going to be like a Karen.
Okay.
So there was three people on the there were three people on the opposite side, which was the director, the producer, and the actual artist.
Okay.
And I don't know how many people they auditioned, but I ended up being, my name in the video was Sharon. I played Karen's daughter.
Okay.
And Karen is a Karen, and I'm a baby Karen, I guess is the best way to explain it. And the lady was, she made it a little difficult because I was already kind of intimidated. It was my first time, but she never, ever turned it off. So like when we were recording in front of a green screen, she's on the sidelines doing all kind of stuff, distracting me.
Right.
And I'm like, geez. And halfway through the shoot, I found out that they all thought she was my mom. And I'm like, no, that's not my mom. No. And she was funny. Some of the people you meet on set are just, it's so funny because you'll meet people that are like doctors and lawyers and have retired. And then you'll meet people that they might be homeless.
Right.
You know, and it's everyone in between there. I feel like I've told my husband this, I'm a lighthouse. I'm not even a beacon of light. I'm a lighthouse for the crazies. And they find me and they tell me their life story. I've had a lady tell me how she had altercations with her husband and she tried to run him over and she stabbed him and she's awaiting court charges. And
wow.
All of this. And I'm just like, you don't say. And it's like, how do you respond to that? And she just kept on telling me and telling me and telling me. And then I met on the same set, same day, actually, I met Latrice, you know,
yes.
Latrice Jimenez, and I'm pretty sure I butchered her last name.
Sounds right.
She was like, Bridget, you need to get your friend. I'm like, Latrice, you need to shut your mouth. That's not my friend. And we still talk about that. So you make lifelong friends, yeah. And then you make lifelong inside jokes.
True. True story. Oh, so he is smiling off to the side. Yep. Okay. Yeah, it is true that you do meet a lot of interesting people. And I think with any, like, you know, just like in the society itself, you meet a bunch of people, and some people are weird and they're out there. You don't really click with them. But then there's those people that you do click with, you do make lifelong friends with, and people that you know that will support you. They may not be able to support you in a fiscal sense or in a being there physically for you sense, but at least they have, you know, the root you on and stuff like that. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, and they have your back.
Yes, they do. They do. So that music video was the only thing you had, you actually auditioned for? You had to do other auditions?
I've done other auditions. I'm trying to think. I've actually had some auditions for movies on Lifetime. Obviously, I didn't get that. But I, back to kind of that auditioning process, I just looked at it as kind of like this is a little baby acting class. Sometimes you'll get feedback. Most of the time you won't.
Right.
Sometimes you'll get callbacks. Sometimes you won't.
Right.
So you just get, I feel the more you do it, the more it becomes second nature and the easier it is for you.
Yeah.
And the better off that comes, because I can look at auditions that I had from the beginning and auditions that I have from now. And in my opinion, it's night and day.
Right.
Just because you get more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just one of those things. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get. And that just, it comes off that way.
Right. One thing I've always wondered about with actors, and I've heard stories, so it's like I don't know anything about it, but like, you go to an audition, and you, like you said, it could be, you don't know how many people are auditioning for this role. It might be a handful of people, or it might be a nationwide, worldwide casting call.
Exactly.
You're putting out. So you might be, you have hundreds of thousands of people auditioning for this role. And a lot of times, an actor does not get the call back, you know, like, whatever, you know. How do you, as an actor, any actor, process that feeling of, I auditioned for a role. What's your next step? I did an audition. I answered a casting call. I auditioned. What do you do next? Do you sit there and worry about it? Or do you go on about your business?
I go on about my business, because I feel like if it's meant to be, it's going to be. Right. And if it's not, it's not. But I know there are a lot of other people out there that they harp on it. And they're constantly checking their email. And they're constantly checking for voice messages and stuff. You know, did I get a call back? Did I this? Did I that? Just because they don't send you a call back,
right,
doesn't mean they didn't like you. They didn't like you for that role.
Right.
You might not look like what they want. You might not sound like what they want.
True.
You know, you might not convey the level, per se, the level of sadness that they want. Like, you may be a level 9 sadness and they want 3.
Right.
But you don't know that when you audition. So you just have to do what you think is the best at that moment. One thing I would give advice-wise to other actors is, if you do submit an audition and you don't hear anything, and then you see that same casting person for another movie or another role, and you submit to that, and they also ask you for an audition, that means they like you. They just didn't like you for that role.
Interesting point. That's an interesting point. Especially if it's the same casting director.
Exactly.
Okay. Casting agency.
Just to name drop, Matthew Morgan. I've never worked with Matthew Morgan.
Right.
I've done a bunch of auditions for him.
Right.
So, because at first I was kind of like, well, I guess he just doesn't like me. And then somebody, I heard that somewhere. I'm like, well, you know, that really makes a lot of sense. Because if he didn't like me at all.
Right.
He wouldn't keep wasting his time,
right,
watching my auditions and saying, yeah, let her send one in.
Right.
Because you can submit yourself for something and never, ever get an audition.
Right. Very true.
So they have to, I mean, that in and of itself is a process.
Oh, yeah.
So I know a lot of people don't know how that works, but you submit yourself and they see your picture and they see like a little bit about you, and then they weed out, I don't know what the ratio is,
right,
but they weed out a ton of people. Then they send first auditions.
Right.
And then they weed out from that until they get their, who they want, or, you know, and sometimes you'll just do an audition, one audition and get it. And then some, I've heard of people doing like 7 or 8 auditions for the same role,
right,
and then they're weeded out.
Right. Especially for something bigger.
Right.
You know, because you might have a main actor, actress, whatever, cast for their role already. You have to find the physical chemistry between people and the emotional chemistry between people. So you might have a little process that makes sort of the big cattle call kind of thing. Narrow it down a couple of people, do some in the call back, another audition for it, weed it down some more, and then they might do some chemistry tests or camera tests with,
right,
people and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a, so like you said, just because you didn't get that role doesn't mean they don't like you. this might have been a good fit for that role.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of roles, just to bring it up, I know it's a hot topic right now with body positivity and all of that, but a lot of roles are for size 3, 4, and 5. Mm-hmm. I am not, if you do not know me, feel free to Google me and find out, but I am not a size 2, 3, 4, or 5. And that limits me as to what roles are available.
Right.
And I've spoken with Darren, and I'm going to probably butcher his last name, Dortch. He was one of the writers for Claws on TNT. And we kind of go back and forth and communicate on Instagram and stuff. And he purposefully writes plus size people into his scripts. He's writing right now for some stuff, I think it's on the OWN network. But everything he writes, he includes plus size people. He includes Kings of Napa. That's the name of it that he's writing now. There's even like a little person in there. So they're trying to include everybody because I think representation matters, regardless if it's a color representation, gender, sexual preference, any of that.
Right.
And I mean, I don't want to sound like, oh, she's woke, but I mean, everybody matters and everybody should be able to relate to somebody on TV or a movie. And I think it's very important. And I'm glad that the industry is starting to pick up on that. And everybody doesn't have to be a size 2, 5, 6 with blonde hair and blue eyes.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because that's not the world we live in.
Because that is not the world we live in.
I can see that. And I agree with that. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Like Lizzo says, it's about damn time.
Oh, wow. So, you mentioned like the writer of Claws. So, I take it you were on Claws.
Yes. That's where I met my crazy friend that wanted to tell me all about her crime she committed against her husband. So, I know we spoke a little bit about pre-pandemic. So, in the middle of the pandemic, they stopped filming everything for quite some time.
Right.
And my kids actually filmed too. So I was on set of Claws when, with Evan, my son, and we finished that day. And then the next day is when the day that we were there, they declared it a worldwide pandemic. And the next day they shut down filming across the board.
Right.
It just so happens that when they picked filming up, I got picked up to be on Claws. I think it was the second day they started filming again. The first or the second day. The first day might have been rehearsals. And I got picked up to be on Claws. And the way that worked is the whole industry changed. You had to go ahead of time and get a COVID test, which I was low-key terrified of because you saw all of these people with a Q-tip shoved back to their brain. And I was like, oh, my God, why do you do this to yourself? I ask myself that so often. It wasn't that way.
Right.
But it was interesting to see how much it changed. And it's continuing to change. So we're still doing the COVID testing. We're still wearing a mask on set. When the cameras aren't rolling, your mask is on.
Right.
I'm over these masks.
Me too.
I mean, I understand why there's a need for it, but it sucks.
Yep.
It's just not a fun time. Also, they're always like, where's your lipstick? Well, what's the point? If I'm putting a mask on, there's no point in lipstick. So yeah, I did Claws. I've done a bunch of things. I did the Purge TV show. I did Unhinged. I did Filthy Rich, Better Things, All My Life. Sulphur Springs.
You know Sulphur Springs?
And Claws. That was everything probably before the pandemic started.
Sulphur Springs was before the pandemic?
Yes.
Wow.
Both of my kids were in Sulphur Springs too. So that's the only time I've worked with both of them at the same time as when we filmed Sulphur Springs.
Huh.
Yeah. And then the pandemic happened.
And these are all TV shows, though, right?
Yeah. Well, Unhinged is a movie. All right. My Life is a movie. I also did a lot of NCIS New Orleans.
I think everybody's done that.
Yeah.
Except for me. I don't even watch it.
You're the reason that they left them.
Me alone.
You alone.
I'll watch it on Netflix.
Disgusting behavior. It's too late now.
Reruns.
They're not going to bring it back because you didn't watch it. They canceled the series and now they're not filming it in New Orleans. You all by yourself.
All
caused that.
Me.
All you.
I do what I want.
Well, you should stop doing what you want. You should do what I say.
No. No.
You can't blame me for trying.
He was also in the, what's that, Home Team?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, I, so the way that.
Wait, before Home Team, you did Reminiscence?
I did Reminiscence. That was a movie, and that was before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I did do that.
But I want to hear the story about Reminiscence. You know what story I'm talking about.
I know what story you're talking about. There's actually two stories to Reminiscence. I don't know if you know that, but
I know of one.
The way Reminiscence went down is they filmed a lot of it at Jazzland or whatever you want to call it. The old Six Flags, the old Jazzland. Yeah. So it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first day that I was on set of that, and I worked on it a good bit, but the first day it was called The Sunken City, and they filmed it under the Jade Earring because they wanted everything to be hush hush. And we had to get they flooded actually the main walkway when you were to walk into Jazzland. So they built a set around it, but they wanted to look like it was underwater.
Right.
So Movie Magic, spoiler alert, it was like 2-3 feet deep. But when you looked at it, it looked like it was probably about 8 to 9 feet or so deep.
Yeah.
But when they designed the set, they only had access on one side and we had to be on the other side. So they had to put us in a boat and push us across the little, I guess, canal. I don't know what you want to call it, to the other side. And that was all good, great, fine, and wonderful. And then when we had to come back, I got in the boat to come back. They push us across and then they're like, okay, like, you know, get out the boat. So I go to get out the boat and the whole boat started rocking. This man was on the sidelines trying to help me out. And at one point I just like pushed him away and I'm just like, cause I'm going to fall. And like, I already knew. So I'm like, I'm either going to fall by myself or I'm going to fall and I'm going to pull this poor man in here with me. Then the boat's going to flip. It's going to be a whole thing. So I'm just like, get away and let me fall. And I fell in the boat. So, I mean, I was okay. It just kind of bruised my ego some, but then it's like funny too. So when we broke for lunch, we had lunch and we come back and they're like putting people in the boat. I said, look, I'm not getting in the boat. And they said, oh no, no, we don't want you to get in the boat again. And I said, I don't care if you want me to, cause I'm not gonna. So I sat on the bench. Well, then the next day we were still at the same location, but it was a different set. And Hugh Jackman is one of the main actors that's in that movie. And I was sitting down at this picnic table with me and a lady. Her name is Desiree. And they had a bunch of people. It was a cattle call because this was before the pandemic. So right. It was like 250, 300. I heard some people say like 350, 400 people. I don't know. It was a lot.
Yeah.
And we're sitting down and it started to rain. And they wouldn't let us leave the table. And I'm just like, I don't want to get all wet. Like, that's gross.
Right.
And I must have looked extra pitiful because here comes Hugh Jackman, Mr. A-list movie star, and he's got an umbrella. And he walks up to our table and he goes, I'm sorry, ladies. I can only save one of you. And he holds his umbrella over me.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, my God, thank you. And he just looks and he smiles and he's like, oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm like, you know, this is really messed up. I said, I've been married for quite some time and my husband has never held an umbrella for me. But I have an A-list movie star holding an umbrella for me. And he was laughing. And I was like, did you hear about that lady that fell in the boat yesterday? And he goes, oh my God, yeah. We had a whole meeting about it and everything. I'm like, well, it's so nice to meet you. And he goes, that was you? I said, yes. And he about like died laughing. It was so funny. So that's my story when I met Hugh Jackman.
Reese, you made a big splash.
And I had a lot of angry people about that because,
like,
they were jealous.
Okay.
It was because there were so many people and so many people saw it.
Right.
And I've actually heard other people on other sets talking about that.
Really?
Yes. And they were like, yeah, he's so nice. He was holding an umbrella for this extra lady sitting at a picnic table. And I turn around like, that was me.
Like, uh-uh.
And I mean, I don't know if he ever got it. I like to think in my own world that he did, but I don't typically do that. But I wrote a little thank you card and I'm like, oh, you know, it's so nice. And I gave it to, and that's very taboo and you shouldn't do that. So please don't follow what I do.
You do what you want.
Because I do what I want. And I gave it to the PA that gave it to his driver. And the driver was like, oh, he gets a bunch of that. And the PA's like, no, they had a really special moment. He told them and blah, blah, blah. So I like to think that the driver did give it to him and he read it. I don't know. But Hugh Jackman, if you're out there and you can hear me, thank you for saving me.
Thank you for joining us. And join us next week as we continue our conversation with actress Bridget Marlborough.